Hey there! Welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we explore on this podcast. Lately, a lot of it's been focused on, you know, what does it mean to make this happen in, you know, virtual and hybrid spaces. But today I want to talk about, you know, just creativity in particular and this idea of creative confidence. And so I'm going to begin with a bit of a story, my own story, and a key area of my life where I completely lacked creative confidence and then moved to a place where I eventually regained that confidence. Now, sometimes I wish I could go back in time and talk to my 9-year-old self and say, dude, you got this. Right now it's hard, but someday you'll be using your voice to make art. Trust me, it gets better, way better. Now, I was in speech therapy at the time. I can't entirely remember why. I just remember that the therapy was actually pretty fun and that my speech therapist was pretty awesome. I was never really bullied for the way I spoke. A couple times, students might have looked at me funny or laughed, but it was really pretty minor. But somehow I internalized the idea that there was something wrong with my voice. I always felt insecure about the way that I spoke. Now, fast forward 31 years. And I use my voice all the time in my work. I'm recording a podcast that you're listening to right now. And I just made a writing prompt. I've been making a lot more of these writing prompts. You can see them at, you know, my YouTube channel, spencervideos.com. And I make sketch videos. And notice it's two areas that I used to be terrified of, my voice and my ability to draw. In the last 7 years, I have gotten to speak at the White House. I've given a TED Talk, and I've traveled around the world giving keynotes and conducting workshops. I've spent the last 17 years of my life getting in front of students and doing direct instruction. I have made countless instructional videos for my virtual and online courses that I've taught over the last 5 years, and I've created 5 different self-paced professional development courses. I have found my voice. So what happened? What changed for me? Well, one key moment for me was when I competed in the National History Day project in the 8th grade. Now, this was a massive year-long project that involved interviewing former Negro League players and eventually putting together a multimedia presentation. I remember being just terrified of talking to strangers. And I would get so nervous that I would hang up the phone right when I would call them, which was really endearing when you know, call them back. Or I would whisper talk and say, I'm John Spencer from Alta Sierra Middle School. And of course, the person on the other line is probably thinking, he's whisper talking, holy crap, I'm gonna die. But inevitably, I would do these interviews and I would learn so much and I would be so glad that I was actually talking on the phone to somebody. I was beginning at that moment to gain creative confidence. Now, toward the end of the project, I recorded a script. We actually went to a radio studio and I got to record my script. And then I heard it played back to me. And all I could hear was what was wrong with my voice. It was tinny. It was nasally. I didn't enunciate clearly. All of those things that I still feel sometimes right now when I hear my voice. And I remember begging Mrs. Smoot to let me quit. And that's when she said, when you hide your voice, you rob the world of your creativity. And I'm not going to let you do that. Now, Mrs. Smoot's words changed my life. But that change wasn't immediate. It was gradual. I remained embarrassed by my voice for a few more years at least. I remember when I took public speaking as an elective, my freshman year, which was the next year, I froze up entirely, and I had to quit 10 seconds into my first speech. I get it. A lot of people are nervous in front, you know, speaking in front of people, but I was terrified because of my voice. My teacher let me try a second time and then a third time, and it was rocky, but I finished it. Now, both of those experiences helped me find my voice, both literally and figuratively. Those experiences helped me grow in my creative confidence when it came to using my voice. I still have moments when I feel insecure about how I sound. Again, I said before, my voice sounds tinny and nasally, and I speak too slowly. I know that. I can tell that I failed to enunciate certain words when I hear it played back. I can hear, for example, in my last sketch video that I failed to pronounce the T in the word specialty, and it comes out as specially in that writing prompt. Now, I could re-record it and I could try to be perfect, but I won't. I've grown to embrace my imperfections. And overall, I have become confident in my voice. And this has me thinking about the idea of creative confidence and what that means in the classroom. Now, I recently wrote and did a podcast about why it's critical for students to share their work with an authentic audience. Now, this is true even for those who struggle with the content and who lack confidence in their creative abilities. In that article, I told a story about Marco, who struggled with writing and then found an audience through blogging and slowly grew in his confidence. There are key things that happen when students share their work. They become empathetic, they work harder, they develop a growth mindset, they learn to listen to criticism, they become fearless in their work, and they find their creative voice. Now, we don't know what the future holds for students. If 2020 has taught me anything, it's how unpredictable life can be. However, we do know that students need to be creative thinkers and problem solvers. They need to develop resilience in their creative work, and a key part of this is the ability to develop creative confidence. And I mention this because I see so many of the pre-service teachers I work with who lack creative confidence in key areas. For example, when I start out the year with a sketchnote activity, I will have students who get anxious. They'll start sweating or go get a drink of water. They'll cringe at the prompt. They'll start tapping their pencils. Their leg will be shaking. And when I teach virtually, it's often a black blank screen and a private message reading, "What if I'm not an artist?" I've done this activity with kindergartners, though, and first graders, and I never see that kind of body language from them. Don't get me wrong, they're fidgety and they're moving, but not out of nervousness. It's more about excitement. I've never had a six-year-old tell me I'm not an artist. And similarly, I've never heard a seven-year-old say I'm not really a creative type. So what happens? Somehow they lose that creative confidence over time. Now, it could be a bad grade in an art class or an insensitive comment from a classmate. It could be the result of the natural human tendency to compare our creative work to the people around us. But whatever it is, it's often this fear that kills the creative confidence. The fear that your work isn't good enough. The fear that people will laugh at it or mock it or simply ignore it. In other words, it's a fear of rejection. And so many of us are terrified of that. See, every creative act is an act of vulnerability. The more we put into our work, the more exposed we can feel. It's why so many artists and engineers and makers will take it so personally when people don't like their work. As educators, we can be intentional about building our students' creative confidence as we design our lessons and build our classroom communities. So I want to share 7 ways to build creative confidence in our students. Number 1, don't compare yourself to others. If I'm dealing with intense self-doubt, I find myself tempted to try to compare myself to others and just prove that I am above average. It's sort of like being the Lake Wobegon kid. If you grew up listening to NPR, you would know what I'm talking about. But here's the thing. In just about every case, comparing myself to others is actually the culprit and not the solution to self-doubt. See, when you compare yourself to others, you only have two options. One is arrogance, and one is self-doubt and self-defeat. Neither of those work. With this comparison trap, you lose sight on community. You forget about what matters. You start seeing others as competition rather than community. You get jealous of others when they get opportunities that you didn't get. You become risk averse. In other words, you become a lot less creative. But when you let that go, you end up taking chances, reaching out to people, and doing something you simply love because you love doing it. Now, as a classroom teacher, this will always be a struggle. You will have students who get stuck in this comparison trap. But there are certain things that we can do to sort of mitigate it. We can get rid of leveled groups in tracking. We can choose to abandon things like award ceremonies that place certain kids on the pedestal and others just are chopped liver. And instead, we can find ways to celebrate each and every student and their individual accomplishments. I'm not saying every kid gets a trophy here. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying find specific ways to celebrate everybody in profound ways. You can post examples of work from students at every level and find ways for students to share their work with an authentic audience. You can embed self-reflections that require students to reflect on their strengths and weaknesses. And in the process, you'll be sending the message that we are all on a growth journey. We all have strengths and we all have weaknesses. I found that many high achievers who seem confident in their creative ability are actually terrified of getting the wrong answer or finding out that their work is imperfect. And this is why we need to tackle the issue of perfectionism. And so the second thought is abandon perfectionism by focusing on growth. I've met authors who never attempted to publish their work because they continued to mess with the novel indefinitely. It wasn't simply a matter of improvement. It was a fear of imperfection. It was a false belief that the world doesn't need to see your creative work unless it's absolutely perfect. I've met teachers who work an ungodly amount of hours and burn out, and everyone says it's because they didn't take care of themselves, or it's because they worked too many hours, or even they just couldn't figure out work-life balance. But nah, that wasn't it. These teachers worked a crazy amount of hours because of perfectionism. They never experienced the joy of teaching because they operated out of an illusion that they had to be perfect. They bought into the myth that teachers need to be superheroes. And so one of my thoughts here is that it's really important to focus on growth rather than perfection. See, when you believe that you have to be perfect, you will never be able to view yourself as measuring up. You'll always feel like an imposter. And in some cases, this can drive people to gossip about others or to embellish their own accomplishments or to tear other people down. Now, one of the ways that we can fix this is by actually embracing vulnerability. See, like I said, every creative work is an act of vulnerability. And so as teachers, we can have students give feedback, share their work with one another, plan next steps. And one of my favorite ways of doing this is with something called a mastermind group. Now, I created a sketch video about this. If you want to check it out, there's a blog post to go with it. But it's the idea of a horizontal community where students meet in small groups and they share their work, they share their struggles, and they can be vulnerable about their work and their process with trusted students who are in this tight mastermind group. And I think that this vulnerability can help lead to a growth mindset. Carol Dweck has mentioned that, you know, there's fixed mindsets and growth mindsets, and that fixed mindsets view talent as innate, as something you're born with, as something that's fixed. Growth mindset views talent as something that is flexible, something that you can grow into, something that requires hard work. And I think it's really important that they develop a growth mindset when it comes to creative work. That is a key component to developing creative confidence. So how do we do this? Well, there's specific things that we can do as teachers. We can let students resubmit their work for a higher grade. This allows students to make mistakes and improve without being punished. We can have students set reasonable goals and track their progress. They can keep the goals focused on growth rather than achievement levels. We can avoid tracking, ranking, and comparing. We can implement student self-reflection and self-assessment. And we can shift toward a model where it's truly differentiated and students can be working at different levels at the same time. Now, if I have a fixed mindset, I will always slip into perfectionism. I will hide how I'm really doing, and I will give up before I even start. But if I can see mistakes as a natural part of the growth process, I am much more likely to get past perfectionism and embrace vulnerability. I'm more likely to find my voice and grow more confident in my creativity. Number four, set goals that are within your control. Now, goal setting is a key component to a growth mindset, but the types of goals we set are significant. It's important that students set goals in areas that they control. So, for example, if you want to publish on YouTube, the natural tendency students are going to have is to focus on subscriber counts. But that type of goal can actually lead to defeat and a loss of creative confidence. And what's happening there is students are putting the external reality, the things outside of their control, as their measures of success. So they end up being very extrinsically motivated, and when it doesn't work and when it fails to show results, they give up. Now, there are, on the other hand, a lot of things that we can control, right? So you can't control subscriber counts. We can't control if a book does well on Amazon. We can't control if people will love the art that we create. But the reality is there are things that we can control. And this is why it's important that we have goals that relate to what you can actually control. So here's what I mean. These goals could be product goals or process goals. It could be something like, I want to learn how to play this particular piece. I want to create this type of work of art. I want to, and the goals don't have to be measurable necessarily. I know a lot of people think goals have to be, but they could focus on improving your creative process. They could focus on, improving your creative habits, right? So you set, goals that are based on habits. But whatever it is, the idea is that you are starting with goals that you can actually control. And I also think it's important that we encourage students to set small goals that lead to easy wins. So John Acuff in the book Finish writes about the idea of starting out with small goals and gradually moving to higher and bigger goals. So, if your goal is writing a novel, you write 100 words a day, and then eventually 200 words a day, and then 300, and then 500. And the next thing you know, you've set the goal of writing 1,000 words a day, and it's a habit for you. The fourth big idea is to not assess creativity. So what happens is when you assess creativity, students actually become risk averse, and that leads to less creativity. They no longer feel the permission to make mistakes. I made this mistake when I was first doing project-based learning. I would give a score for creativity, and students were actually turning in work that was less creative. And so I got rid of that. But then there was this other reality, this flip side. And it's that in school, and honestly in life as well, we often value the things we assess. We value the quality of a post we write on Facebook when we receive more likes, right? That's an example of an assessment driving behavior. It's subtle, but it's influential. I value the number of steps I take because I have an Apple Watch and I am dead set on closing my 3 rings each day. On a more qualitative note, I inherently value the time I spend with my family, and so I self-reflect on how things are going. I try to be conscious about the amount of time and the quality of the time we spend together. That's assessment. It's qualitative. It's certainly not a grade, but it's some form of assessment. See, assessment creates awareness, and that often helps us see our progress toward our goals. And if we don't assess creativity, we can slip into this mindset where it's just something extra, something that's not very important. Students end up thinking that you really don't value creativity. So on one hand, if we assess creativity, it backfires. But if we don't assess it, we fail to emphasize it. So what's the solution? Well, part of the answer is to celebrate creativity. We don't always think of celebrations as a form of assessment, but they are a powerful way that we assess our progress. If you think about the example of the rings being closed, that's a celebration every time it happens. Badges are an example of that, right? All of those things would be an example of celebration as a form of assessment. Another solution is to have students self-assess both their creative process and their creative progress. So here's what I mean. Instead of giving a grade for creativity, we can have students engage in self-assessment and peer assessment in their creative work. It might be an assessment focused on the ability to do risk-taking, the resilience they face, roadblocks that they face. And it would be a survey on the creative process, right? So I do, for example, a survey with students, and it's focused on their own perception on their ability to take creative risks. Or it might be something like a quick divergent thinking challenge, and they track their progress on a very specific score that they're getting for divergent thinking. This is something where, for example, they have 5 minutes to come up with as many uses for 2 different random items as possible. It can be scored, it can be quantitative, right? Versus the survey or self-reflection that's qualitative. And either way, the goal is that they own the process. And the more they can see how they're doing, coupled with that growth mindset, then they start really developing that creative confidence. Number 5, make it a daily habit. We have to make creativity something that we integrate on a daily basis. Experience is critical for creative confidence. It's a little bit like driving. Right? Think about when you first learned how to drive. You were likely scared. But over time, you grew more confident and more skilled. There's an early phase where we make tons of mistakes. It's way more frequent. The skill level is lower. And the confidence is really low. But over time, the mistakes decrease, the skill level increases, and the confidence becomes solid. We often have an increase in self-efficacy and the belief in our ability to accomplish the task. Now, I'm going to nerd out on self-efficacy for a second. There's actually a downside to having too much self-efficacy, which is this. If our self-efficacy is too high, we can sometimes hit a place of sort of a autopilot. And when that happens, we actually make more mistakes again or more significant mistakes because we don't pay as much attention. So to use the driving example, experienced drivers don't get in very many car accidents, but they do get in car accidents because they fail to pay attention, not because they fail to know what to do. And that's why so many car accidents from experienced drivers are within 1 mile of someone's home. But the hard reality is this. To build creative confidence, you have to spend time. The takeaway is that for creative confidence, it's just going to take hours of creative work. There's no shortcut or workaround for this. Students simply need to engage in creative work for a longer period of time if they want to develop creative confidence. And as teachers, we can implement things like project-based learning, design thinking, inquiry-based learning. We can have students engage in multimedia composition, such as journalism or podcasting. And the thing is, all of those are ways that they can begin to gain that creative confidence in a lot of different domains. Now, I gave examples that were closer to sort of social studies and language arts, but STEM projects and math projects, all of those things help students gain that creative confidence in all kinds of different disciplines. Number six, treat work like an experiment. This is the idea of teaching students that their work doesn't have to be perfect and that all creative work is an experiment. Now, that means they learn how to iterate, they know how to pivot, how to change, but it also means that sometimes, the way I think about it is this. Mistakes are the crap that make growth possible. You can think of it as creative fertilizer. It totally stinks, but it's necessary and it works. Mistakes aren't fun. We know that, but that's exactly what helps allow students to grow and to get over their fear of making mistakes in their creative work. I actually have a little framework. There's a sketch video connected to this about a way for students to process when projects fail. There's a continuum on what to do next between abandoning it completely, revising it, changing it, doing a mashup, all kinds of different options. You can check that out if you want to see a practical framework or a protocol you can use with students. But the idea is that students need to know that some creative work is just not going to work, and that's okay. The final idea, number seven, is to create a high-pressure scenario but provide a safety net. Earlier in this podcast, I shared the story about, finding my voice, right, and the two different teachers in different ways who helped me get over how my voice sounds. But I want to point out that in both cases, they coupled a high stakes element, right? Presenting in front of others, being part of a competition, that kind of stuff, with the permission to make mistakes. In other words, I developed grit because they gave me slack. And we see this phenomenon in all kinds of creative work. In theater, there is a high stakes moment when actors have to perform in front of a live audience. However, there's a rehearsal phase where they are able to make mistakes and grow. Similarly, in design thinking, there's a revision stage before the high stakes launch. If you've ever watched Apollo 13, you'll likely remember a scene where they have to solve this complex problem with limited resources. It's this super high stakes moment, right? They got to get everybody back home to Earth. However, that multidisciplinary team had spent years working together in rehearsals where they analyzed their mistakes and focused on growth. When students have a high-stakes scenario, they're typically going to face fear and anxiety. But as unpleasant as that may be, they also grow from it and learn that it wasn't quite as scary as they thought it would be. Over time, they get used to it. They grow less and less anxious. By adding a safety net, students have a safe space where they can make mistakes along the way. So as a teacher, you can couple that idea of the safety net with something that is sort of high pressure. And eventually, when that happens, students will grow fearless in their creative work. So again, growing up, I was insecure about my voice. I had a great speech therapist and parents who were wonderful and supportive, but I knew my parents would be encouraging no matter what. I needed outside validation and affirmation to find my voice, and that came in the form of teachers. As teachers, we can design the learning activities to focus on creative confidence. We can build the classroom community with a focus on growth and experimentation. We can design structures that facilitate a growth mindset. We can get to know our students and build relationships where we can affirm them in their creative work. In the end, students will ultimately be known, and they'll find their creative voice, and over time, they will gain that critical creative confidence. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy listening to it, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast? Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.